and welcome to The Other Marthas, the show where a drama student and a film graduate try to make sense of things we wish we were qualified in instead. A quick disclaimer before we get started, we don't claim to be experts on any of the topics we'll be discussing, so while everything we say will be based on individual research, it's all a bit of fun and we suggest that you take everything we say with a pinch of salt. I'm Martha, I'm the drama student.
And I'm the other Martha, the film graduate.
So Martha, what are you telling me about today?
Well, Martha, today... it's a very special episode of The Other Marthas, in that we're returning after a hiatus of some time. That was just because of Wi-Fi issues, pretty much. So, hello, we're back now. Today, I'm going to be telling you about Julie Daubigny. I have my sister to thank for this, and I actually had my sister to thank for the Operation Mincemeat episode as well. So shout out to Natasha. Thank you for the suggestion. My sister is a history graduate, so she actually has much more interesting stories than me. So sometimes she just tells me who I should look up and I do it. So now you know. Right, so today this is the story of Julie Daubigny, whose life, you'll like this, Martha. It really reminds me of some of the best parts of The Monk, which we read back in, sixth form, which is just this piece of literature about a monk who gets a bit horny. Someone elopes with a ghost by mistake. And this reminded me of it. So you should like this.
Does she elope with a ghost?
She doesn't elope with a ghost, but there are certain hijinks involving trying to get people out of convents and killing people and needing to get royal pardons and things like that. So lots of escapades. She's also become something of a bisexual icon. You'll see why presently. In her life, she managed to survive two death sentences. I've realised I've put survive. I kind of mean evade. Survive is slightly misleading. Like, oh yeah, they chopped her head off and she was fine.
Or they were just really bad at murder. They were just, execution. They were just like, oopsie.
But yeah, so she managed to survive an awful lot of stuff. But ultimately, she died of what I have diagnosed as gay pining at 33. So this is Julie Daubigny. So, she's born around 1673 in Paris, France. She's the only child of Count d'Armagnac, who is a secretary to the Master of the Horse of Louis XIV. Now, in 1682, so when she is 9, I guess, she moves to Louis XIV's palace at Versailles. And Woo! She lives there in the Grand Stables. And she's educated alongside the court pages. Yes.
She lives in a stable.
It's not a stables. It's the stables. So just considering her dad worked for the Master of Horse, I assume it's just kind of, it'd be like living in the financial district. You don't actually live in the bank, but you live where the bankers do their stuff. You know? So she lives in the stables.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
I could be wrong. Maybe she slept just in some hay, but I don't think so.
So wait, her dad was Master of the Horse?
No, her dad was a secretary to the Master of the Horse.
Count d'Armagnac. I've got my notebook to make notes, but I'm having to stroke my dog's face.
So she's living in the Grand Stables at this point. She's educated alongside the court pages because her dad just kind of thinks, why not? Good man. She's learning riding, drawing, dancing, and swordsmanship. And she's very good
Glorious.
At all of them, especially swordsmanship. She is a badass.
What a fun education.
I know. Now, when she's 14, the Comte, who's just a local noble, I guess, took her as a mistress, which happened at the time. And as was commonly the case, he took her as a mistress, but married her off to a guy named Maupin to kind of keep up appearances, and then sent Maupin to go and live in the south in this cushy
what
job.
What a snake!
I know. Very clever. Now, the idea was that Julie would go with her husband, but she just kind of went, nah, and stayed in Versailles. Gets bored with the Comte and her distant husband, so she eloped with her fencing master, who's a guy called Sir Anne. So she and her fencing master are getting along fine until he kills someone in an illegal duel, so they have to kind of go on the run for a bit, and they make a living doing fencing demonstrations and as kind of traveling entertainers in taverns and fairs and stuff like that. But after a while, she gets a little bit bored, and so she gets a girlfriend. She is swashbuckling around with her fencing master. She spots a local merchant's daughter and she goes, oi, and they spark up a romance. And as you may imagine, in 17th century France, this wasn't like super chill. It happened, but people were a little like, "What? That's not how it works." And so the girl's parents sent her to a convent to kind of de-lesbian herself.
Classic.
I know about this. Well, I don't get why when homophobic parents think that their kids are gay, in order to stop them from being gay, they send them where all the other gays go.
And all the other girls her age.
Yeah, exactly.
Sounds
exactly.
Like it will really discourage her.
Yeah, you'd be like, "Oh, okay, I'm going to send you to, you know, a boys' boarding school." She'd be like, "But I'm a girl." And they'd be like, "Ha." Like, that wouldn't be a good thing to do, but from there, with what they're trying to do.
Yeah, or, like, again, we don't condone that. But, like, say, like, okay, you have to stay here then. And
yeah,
you're not
allowed
out.
What some people did do,
which,
like,
nice.
marry their kids off. And go, okay, it's fine. She can't gay anymore because she's with man. Which also, obviously, not a good thing to do. But it just doesn't make any sense to me what their thinking is. Like, oh, no, can't have
them
gaying.
I think,
better go where the gaying is.
I think it's because they think it's devilry, don't they?
That's true.
They don't think, like, oh, if she's around other girls, like, it's not really going to discourage her. They probably think, like, oh, if she's around the nuns will get the devil out of her.
True. And to be fair, I mean, I doubt it would have been fun. But yeah, it's just something I find interesting.
I just thought, wouldn't it be so cute if, like, the head nun, or whatever they're called, is also gay, and she's like, send your horrible sinning daughters here, and then she sends them there, and she's like, it's okay.
That's it. That would be really awesome.
Like, a lovely time,
yeah,
at the convent. I think that'd be cute.
I think that would be fantastic.
But it would be cute.
So what Julie does, she's like, oh no, my girlfriend's in a convent, what am I going to do? There's only one thing to do. She enters the convent herself, so she takes the holy orders and is like, yeah, no, I renounce, I don't know, the devil and whatever else you may have to renounce, and I'm going to not kill, and is admitted to the nunnery. She waits for a nun to die, and then she snatches the body, smuggles it into her girlfriend's room, and, like, tucks it under the covers, you know, like... I know, it's really morbid, but you know, like, you hear about in boarding school stories when people are like,
just use a pillow.
Yeah, I know. Didn't necessarily need to be a body, but...
not a nun's actual corpse.
I can see why she wouldn't use a pillow, because what she then does is set fire to the whole convent. So I guess she just wants people to find bones in her girlfriend's room and be like, oh my God, she's dead. So she and the girlfriend... merrily ride into the distance. The girlfriend is presumed dead, so the two of them can just kind of gallivant away. However, 3 months into this gallivanting, the girlfriend is like, look, Julie, I kind of quite liked being alive and having a family and, like, not, you know, sleeping under a horse with you pretending to fence, but it's quite embarrassing. So she goes back to her parents, which has got to be a bit of a blow.
Yeah, that's gotta hurt when you've snuck someone out of a nunnery by burning it down. To be fair, it's awkward for the girlfriend as well, because she's like, I appreciate what you did, but,
but I didn't ask you to do it,
and also it was very extra, like,
Julie
written letters, like, she might have been like, hey Julie, not loving it here, can you find a way of getting me out?
Yeah,
and then Julie,
like
sneaks in with a corpse, and he's like, I'm going to set the nunnery alight. And then the girl's like, okay.
Yeah, to be fair, it would put you off, wouldn't it?
It would put me off, because I would just think, like, I appreciate the planning, fine, but there's sort of a level where if you're going out with someone and all of a sudden they propose something that is... you know, not normal.
Yeah.
To be like, can't really say no because you're holding a corpse and also matches. So
the girlfriend's parents this time are not taking chances, considering from their point of view, they're just, you know, a nice little merchant family. And then all of a sudden, their daughter has a girlfriend. So they're like, oh God, she's going to go to hell. Let's send her to a convent. And then the convent burns down. They're like, oh my God, we've killed our only daughter by sending her to this convent. She died horribly in a fire. And then the daughter rocks up like, yeah, no, I just didn't like you. So, you know, faked my own death. But it wasn't me, it was Julie. So they don't like Julie. And so they take it to court. And they basically get Julie convicted of arson and body snatching and kidnapping, all of which is entirely fair. She did do all of these things. And so she's sentenced to burn at the stake.
Harsh?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you say harsh. She did burn down a convent and manhandle a nun's body to fake someone else's death and kidnap that person.
But I'm putting on my defense lawyer hat.
All right.
Number one, we don't know if anyone was hurt in the fire.
No.
If someone was killed in the fire, maybe that is, you know, for the time, it's like, okay, well, you killed some nuns, so you have to burn.
Yeah.
But we don't know that. Secondly, yes, she manhandled a nun's corpse, but the nun was dead. And as far as we know, she just carried it from one place to a cozy bed and then set fire to it. For the charge of kidnap, I don't think she kidnapped her girlfriend. I think the girlfriend was like, yeah, sounds good, like escaped. And then like a few months down the line was like, okay, I'm not having any fun now, bye. Burning is too much.
Possibly a little extreme. But bear in mind also that at this time, because she loved dueling and getting into sword fights, she'd killed a good sort of estimated about 10 men just in duels at this point. She'd always managed to get away with it.
Well, that's their own stupid fault for dueling her.
I know, dueling is such a, it's just such a weird culture, and it's all, like, I'll get into this a little bit later, but it's always things where, you know, you've been seeing a girl for 2 weeks, and then someone else, you know, I don't know, her brother doesn't approve, so you fight to the death. Like, no, have a little conversation.
It's very dramatic.
It's just not something to die over if you're like, oh, I'm not sure about this lad you've been seeing. But okay, well, thanks for your opinion. I'll bear it in mind.
It is very dramatic, especially with a sword fight. Mm. I think also that's different than a duel with guns.
Yes, because I agree.
With the sword fight, like, some of it is based on like skill and, you know, fighting. Whereas like with a gun duel, you literally, it's like who turned around the fastest.
Yeah.
And who's like quickest with the gun.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Also, I think with I mean, it really depends on what your aim is, but with things like sword duels, in the same way as I guess some people resolve things with just fisticuffs, there can be a clear point at which someone's won without it being that the other person has died. Like, it
yeah, like
first
how in the
blood,
films,
or
they like how in the films they like knock the sword away and put it to their neck and they're like, do a surrender.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas with a gun, it's kind of just too late as soon as literally anything's happened. But this lady, just with a sword, has managed to do quite a lot of damage.
Do you know, though, that's the only thing that I learned from Hamilton was that if I'm ever in a gun duel, just to full-on shoot them.
I feel
I'd
that
be
is
burr.
Not the message Hamilton is trying to convey.
Because it doesn't go well for either Hamilton to be like, oh, I'm going to shoot at the sky. Like,
it's
oh,
true.
Well done you, now you're dead. Whereas Burr and the other guy are having a lovely time.
I mean, I feel like they may have been tortured for the rest of their lives about it, but
I don't think Theatre McGee was.
Theatre McGee? Oh, George Eaker.
Theatre McGee.
I guess we'd have to write a musical called George Eaker. I don't think it would sell well.
And he's pointing, instead of his finger pointing upwards, he's just pointing a gun straight forwards.
But anyway, she's in a sticky situation with everything she's been convicted of. There's only one problem from the sort of prosecution's viewpoint here, which is that Julie doesn't bother coming to court. Julie is busy in Paris. She's seducing a singer called Gabriel Vincent Thévenard, who is helping her to get an audition for the Paris Opera.
She's like, sorry everyone, can't stand trial because
got a really important audition. My big break.
I love that.
Isn't it amazing? And the opera and the Comte Demoniac are so taken by her voice that they petition the king to lift her sentence, and he basically is just so, he thinks that's so hilarious that he does it. He's just like, yeah, join the opera, why not?
Is this still Louis XIV?
Yeah.
Classic.
It's a very Louis XIV kind of thing to do.
Polish up my chords, I think, then.
Your chords?
Oh, my vocal chords. You know, just in case I want to get away with anything.
Yeah, true. Just if you need a queen's pardon. But yes, so instead of being burnt to death, Julie joins the opera, where she enjoys a hugely successful career as La Maupin, which is the name, Maupin being the name of the husband that she was married off to when she was 14, who she's seen about once. She's just like, oh, that's quite a fun stage name. So she takes it.
I bet he liked that.
Yeah, I bet. Well, he probably had no idea. Like, he's just having his job down south. Like, oh, I had a wife once.
Yeah, he's like, oh, I had a wife at one point. And then he hears about this, like, scandalous opera singer. And he's like, is that my wife?
Yeah, exactly. Fans really liked her. She apparently had the most gorgeous voice. And they also really liked her androgynous aesthetic, which I think is really cool because that then became such an emblem of, like, rock and metal, like with Marilyn Manson and Ziggy Stardust, you know, centuries later. And sorry, she had it down already.
You said, yes? Manson, and it threw me. Thought you were talking about the Manson family.
That's okay. Although I think I'm right in saying that Marilyn Manson chose his name from Marilyn Monroe and Charlie Manson, which is really disturbing.
I mean, you know, it's the kind of thing people do.
People
name themselves after murderers.
People are weird. So, Julie conducted various affairs during her time at the opera with people of all genders. And one time she publicly beat up a man for pestering her female co-stars. She's really cool and entirely shameless. And she was able to get away with all this, largely because French court at the time was just super queer, very drag heavy and funky. Court was quite a flamboyant place, and in particular Louis XIV's brother, I believe this was Philippe, it might have been a different one, was just quite openly gay, and he enjoyed such pastimes as dressing in drag and sleeping with men. So Louis kind of had to turn a blind eye.
Sorry,
to the whole
I love that
gay
those...
not good thing.
You're like, he's quite openly gay, he likes drag and sleeping with men. It's like, okay, well, yeah. That,
we didn't really need the drag part, but...
Yeah, I mean, we didn't need the drag part to be the hobby to prove someone was gay, I think.
If they're also sleeping with men. But yeah, basically, they couldn't crack down too hard on it, even though the church and sort of the official stance was very homophobic, because otherwise they would kind of have to crack down on the royal family as well. They didn't want that. And so Julie could pretty much do what she wanted. Until this one time in 1695, when she took things a smidge too far. So Louis's brother Philippe invites Julie to a ball, all fine and dandy, lovely royal ball, what could go wrong? So Julie turns up in man's clothing, which isn't unusual for her. There's, you know, also, people muttering. Go on.
Men's clothing at the time is also like flamboyant. Quite got kind of a feminine side to it.
Yeah, like, it's definitely more dressy than nowadays.
Yeah, it looks like
sure.
a dress. It yeah. just has trousers instead of a skirt.
Yeah, but men. Either way, she turns up in men's garb and she proceeds to dance with all of the ladies. She's basically playing the man, I guess.
How
obviously
fun.
That's problematic nowadays, but I think that's what she was going for. And that's fine. There's like a few people behind their fans being like, isn't that a woman? She shouldn't be dancing with the women. But everyone's just kind of like, it's Julie, it's fine. Until Julie decides to have a bit of a snog with an eligible marquise whom several of the men at the ball were courting, which really makes me laugh, partly because big up this marquise who's invited, like, I don't know, five different suitors to the ball as it is and been like, maybe one of you has a chance, I don't know, woo me. And then this lady turns up in drag and she's like, actually... and just has a nice little snog. And then what happens immediately is three of these suitors are like, okay, Julie, you and me outside, this has gone far enough. And so the Marquise is just like, oh no, have I done something wrong? Oh, ah, me, I was just having fun with my female friend. But Julie's like, sure thing, and follows these three men outside, proceeds to defeat them very calmly, one by one. So they're just kind of coming at her with swords, and she's like, oh, blip, blip, stab, who's next? Wipes off her sword and goes back inside to be like, where were we? And everyone's like, you just killed three men. And Julie's like, yeah, I'm so wild. But this is a little bit too far even for Julie, and she decides to wait for it all to blow over and pop over to Brussels for a bit. So she does that. She has an affair with a German prince while she's over there, just the change of scene. She's there for a year, and then she's like, that's enough. Like, no one will remember the three men I killed. So then she comes back to Paris. She actually reunites briefly with her husband, who, again, I'm pretty sure she's not seen since she was 14. She's like, hey, remember me? I've been using your name at the opera, wild times. And she goes back to the opera full time. She has a fantastic time there, even more successful run. And she, at the same time, becomes known for winning fist fights. Just a few other things she did while she was having a fun time at the opera. She threatened to shoot the Duchess of Luxembourg. I don't know the context of that, but she just threatened it.
That's amazing. I love it? That.
She ended up in court for attacking her landlord. At one point, she decided that she wanted to be a maid for this very popular noblewoman called the Countess Marino. And when she was supposed to be getting this lady ready for this really big ball, she adorned the back of her hair with radishes just for the lulz. Like, oh, yes, there you are. Your bows are all in place. And she just whacked radishes on the back of her head.
How did this woman not notice radishes?
I don't know. Well, maybe I'm thinking about the time. I assume she maybe had like a tall wig or something. But yes, she also reportedly, one of her affairs was with this guy called the Elector of Bavaria. Well, it wasn't his name, that was who he was. And she was in a bit of a fling with him. And then he realised that she was a little too intense when she stabbed herself on stage with a real dagger. Oh, and so God. He, like, I know, he like comes up after the show and he's like, hey, Julie, I've been thinking you're a little intense. You literally stabbed yourself on stage. So he offers her 40,000 francs and is like, please leave me alone. Just don't see me again.
Wow. Imagine like being so extra that you're like, boyfriend pays you off to not see you anymore.
I know. I mean, that's essentially what happened with Anne of Cleves and Henry VIII, I guess. But that was not her being extra. That was just him being like,
rude.
Yeah. So, alas, Julie's final chapter was soon to come. She fell in love with the Marquis de Florence, and this Marquis died in 1705, at which point Julie was so distraught that she retired from the opera and she joined a convent, funnily enough. And that's where she died 2 years later, age 33. I don't know what of. Maybe the convent took its revenge and ate her, I don't know.
That's so weird.
I know.
And she was like, oh, I burnt down a convent once. And they're like, welcome.
But she seemed to just be very good at running from her past. So I don't know if she just kind of didn't really have to say who she was or...
Yeah, I guess not. I suppose if a convent, like convent, if a woman turns up a bit destitute looking and it's like, I love Jesus.
It's kind of the one thing they're supposed to do is take him in, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of their whole job. I mean, also, other than just being rude.
Yeah, and a lot of the point of convents is, oh, this woman is sinful, please take her in. So I guess if they're like, oh, too much sin for us, it's like, oh my God, where do we put her?
Yeah, that's true. I suppose they can't really turn someone away, especially, but I wouldn't want to be the convent that knows she's burnt down a convent. And you're like, I feel like you'd have to put a watch on her to be like, make sure she doesn't burn us all in our beds.
I'm just imagining like one of the nuns has a cough and they're all like, the moment one of the nuns dies, Julie is out of there.
Oh yeah, true.
But yeah, so she died quietly in a convent at 33, and that's about it, which is so weird. And it makes me wonder as well, because other than this last love affair with the Marquise de Florence, she seems to have sort of moved from person to person really quickly, and she's always like absolutely obsessively in love with them, but then as soon as it sort of fizzles out or becomes less than her fantasy, then she'll just move on to the next one and that's fine. So why it was that she was so attached to this one woman that when she died, she was just like, right, that's it for me. I don't know.
Well, people, I suppose though that there are people, like modern people that have done that, that have had, like, you know, like people do have like loads of partners and then they're just like, oh,
then this is
one person.
That's true. Maybe like the entirety of Julie's life up until she meets the Marquis de Florence is essentially her hoe phase. And then she's like ready to settle down with this Marquis. Yeah. Yeah, that's true, actually. And I don't know the nature of her relationship with Marquis de Florence, like whether they were sort of fully together or whether it was a case of they knew each other and there was some romantic activity going on, but it wasn't an established relationship, or whether it was just Julie pining after her. I don't know.
So wait, you said that she was going to be killed twice. So the first one was burned to a stake.
Yeah,
killing the three men at the party?
Yes, I think so. Right. But that's a good question because I kept reading that she had to be officially pardoned twice. And the second, the famous one is the convent situation. But yeah, I think the second one is when she then had to kind of go to Brussels, wait for it to blow over and then come back.
So is the person that paid her off?
Yeah.
And said, leave me alone. Was that a man?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I was confused. I think because they both had F in their name, I think I was confusing the person that paid her off and the person she loved forever. And I was like...
No. The Elector of Bavaria is the guy who paid her off. And they were just a fling, I think.
Oh,
and
sorry,
he was probably very excited that this very passionate, intense, incredible woman was interested in him. And then she stabbed herself on stage and he was like, oh, I will take my nice bread and water wife any day,
but
thank
this
you.
Is the thing. You knew what she was like when you start going out with her. So
well,
then
yeah,
like,
but sometimes
whoa.
People just get in too deep and then they're like, oh, I didn't mean it to get this intense.
Yeah, I suppose so, yeah.
Just poor lad getting a bit carried away.
Okay, and then so the Marquise de Florence, we don't know whether they were going out for sure.
I don't know. I'm sure someone does, but I didn't look it up that far. I suspect it will have been a case of something like the middle option that I suggested in terms of they weren't allowed to be a super established relationship, but sure. They will have had amorous connections, and clearly Julie was very besotted with her.
Yeah. She's cool.
Right? I know. And there's a certain amount of speculation as to sort of how much of it to believe. We don't know her exact birth date or place, and her name seems to change within sort of documents and letters and things. So her stage name was always Mademoiselle Maupin. And she's also referred to in letters as Madeleine, Emily, and Julia, as well as Madame de Maupin. So it may be that elements of her story have been embellished or merged with other people's escapades, but I'm inclined to just kind of take it as read and be like, absolute legend.
Yeah, I suppose like nowadays, like if she was alive nowadays, she'd probably have a reality TV show.
Yeah, she probably would. To be fair, it's all these historical people where because them existing openly at a time that was so resistant to people who defied gender norms so outrageously and also were so openly queer, it's really, really cool because it's like, how did you manage to just have such a brazen, fantastic life when all of this was so illicit in your time? But nowadays it would just kind of be like, oh, what's Julie done now? Like, can she calm down?
I don't know, though.
Popping up on Facebook, like, oh, Julie's engaged again, is she?
I don't know. I do think that there'd definitely be an audience for it.
Oh, yeah.
I think the only thing that would put people, like modern people, off of her, and I mean, you know, people that are all good with the whole gay situation.
Good with the gay.
Good with the gays. Is the murder.
Yeah.
Because I think that would be her downfall nowadays, would be the fact that she was murdering people.
That's
aside
true.
From that.
But again, it was entirely honourable to do it in, well, I say that not legally, but from a personal viewpoint, people would see it as a point of honour to duel over disagreements.
Yeah, I just find it weird that the men were so willing to duel with a woman. Because even that, like, I feel like my assumption would be that they'd be like, oh, how embarrassing.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't even try and fight with you because I'll just win.
I actually, that's a really good point. I'm glad you said that, because I, when I read that, was sort of almost in a way chuffed that they saw it as a threat, because I think a lot of the time in periods of history before they necessarily had a language for what being queer was, particularly between women, it'd be like you could watch your wife and another woman having a snog and be like, ah, I wish I could understand these close bosom friendships that these women have. And you just, because it would be like, that could never threaten the love that I, a man, give a woman. And you just don't understand it as the same thing. Whereas these guys are like, oh my God, this woman might steal my woman.
Yeah, they kind of treated it like how you would treat it if at a party a man started snogging the girl you were courting.
Exactly, exactly. And it probably helped, well, not helped, but contributed that she was dressed as a man. So I feel like it would be easier for them to be like, this man impersonator is stealing my woman.
But I went, did everyone know it was her, or was it like a masked ball? So she like comes in as a man, and then like only after she's murdered them all, she like takes her mask off and she's like, hey, it's Julie. I am Julie. No, and everyone was like, whoa.
Yeah, everyone's like, oh my God, Julie, what have you done? Why have you done this?
And also, why have you taken your mask off when you didn't know who you were after you've murdered three people?
Now would be the time to keep the mask on and like run. Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure they all knew it was her. It was just kind of a thing that she did. She enjoyed cross-dressing and making a bit of an impression and transgressing gender norms.
I think she's so fun. I'd love a TV show about her.
Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds slightly like Gentleman Jack.
Yeah, I never watched that.
Neither did I. So I don't really know what I'm basing that off, other than just the central character exploring more masculine and inverted commas presentations, but still being like, yeah, I'm a woman and I'm also gay.
Yeah, I don't know. But I feel like this one would have more fun escapades, again, having never seen it. But I just feel like there'd be fun escapades in it, because it's like, oh, murder. Yay.
Yeah,
oh, I'm not pressing it out. More murder.
Yeah, that's true. I feel like,
and also more fun colours, because
yes,
I'm not sure what is it, Victorian Gentleman Jack?
Ooh, I want to say yes.
I've seen a lot of people wearing black in it.
Yeah, it's very drab.
Whereas Louis XIV's court, glorious colours.
Yeah.
And so it would be fun just visually.
That's very true. I feel like it could be done either as like a swashbuckling romp, like the Three Musketeers almost, or it would be one of those like artsy French films where you end up
walking out of the cinema.
That's not where I was going with it. If you wanted to portray her life as like this empty thing of always following the next thrill, like Amadeus or Requiem for a Dream in a way.
I'd do it swashbuckling. I think that's more fun. Like, yes, obviously we can have a sad portrait of a woman, but isn't it more fun to be like, hey, set fire to the nuns?
Yeah,
hey,
yeah, true. And the also men. There's something to be said about it being portrayed as cool and empowering, that she just kind of lets her emotions rule her and makes the best of it and moves on, as opposed to it being this kind of desperate search for something.
Yeah, I just think, like, sure, maybe that's what she was doing, but also, could she not have just been having fun?
Yeah, 100%. I think my psychological portrait of the possible her is more just, like, what I'm projecting onto it than...
Yeah,
than...
I feel like she could be, like a Jack Sparrow kind of figure, but, like, more fun, because she's actually not just a weird drunk pirate guy.
Yeah,
I don't remember any of the plots of Pirates of the Caribbean, as a side note. I just remember kind of like a vibe.
Yeah.
And like, I couldn't tell you what's happened in any of them, but I've got a very strong visual mood board of the film. But what I'm saying is there would be a strong vibe.
Yes.
And I think we should pitch it. I think we should go around and pitch our TV show.
To be fair, yeah.
I think it would
be fun.
I think someone's going to listen to this and they're going to steal our idea, and then we'll sue them for millions and we won't have to do any work.
Oh, yes, please. That's such
but
a good idea.
But we don't
idea.
Own the story, so everyone would be like, you don't have any money.
That's
you
true.
You can't have our money because you don't own the story. And we'd be like, okay, well,
so basically, if our next podcast is us sulking and trying to say why this was our idea, it's because someone else had an idea and we're salty about it.
No, I've thoroughly enjoyed learning about her.
Good, I did as well.
Yeah, I think she's slightly divisive because of all the murder.
Yeah.
But also, she didn't really murder. She just killed people in duels that people like either challenged her to or accepted the challenge of. Because when someone offers to duel you, you can be like, oh, no, thank you. Yeah. I'll take the shame.
We can blame the dueling culture rather than the duelie.
I wonder when dueling became not popular.
Ooh, I'm not sure.
My first thought was like after the First World War, because everyone had had enough of shooting people.
Oh, that's not a bad shout, actually.
Because I can imagine, like, up until the late 1800s, people being like, yeah, I'll have a pop. Whereas, like, I can't imagine after, like, 1918, like, because I could imagine during the war start, if you give a whole bunch of young men pistols and guns, they're going to be like, let's have a duel.
Yeah.
But, like, later on, I couldn't imagine. But maybe, we don't know.
No, that's a really good point. Yeah, I'd be really interested to know that.
Okay, apparently England's last duel was on the 20th of May, 1845. And by that point, people were kind of mocking it.
Okay.
People were kind of like, oh, this is kind of stupid. Men are dying over someone buying the shoes they wanted.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. So we were wrong. So it was later. But do you know, I'm happy it was later because people were being slightly less stupid. Thank you for listening to the Other Marthas podcast, the show where a drama student and a film graduate talk about things we have no business knowing. If you enjoyed today's episode, please do like the video, subscribe to our channel, and listen to the next one. Bye!